You guys, time for another Flickers of Fear. This is one of the reviews that I've been looking forward to the longest because this is one of my favorite horror movies of all time. This is The Haunting from 1963. I've written extensively about this movie. I've written extensively about the book by Shirley Jackson, which is also awesome. Obviously, a lot of people are very, very familiar with the Netflix series, The Haunting of Hill House, which is loosely based on Shirley Jackson's book, obviously expands on the story a lot, and, you know, a lot of liberties were taken with it. It's an awesome series, I'm not saying that, but this is actually more of a straightforward adaptation of the book itself, and if you haven't seen it, you totally should, because especially if you're into kind of like foundational horror films, if you're into haunted house stuff, this is definitely one that you need to see, because I feel like a lot of later haunted house stories, especially kind of your slow burn ones from the 1970s, were big time influenced by not only the novel, which I believe came out in 1959, but also this movie, which came out in 1963. So this was directed by Robert Wise, who just prior to this had done West Side Story, and just after this did Sound of Music. So he was kind of known for doing, he was a musicals guy, but he also did, I think he did The Day the Earth Stood Still. He did like other things, so he did some sci-fi as well. Honestly, of all the films of his that I've seen, he's made like a shit ton of like really iconic ones, but this one is easily my favorite. I mean, this one and The Innocents are probably my favorite 60s horror films, and I just love the whole entire atmosphere of this. Is just so fucking great. Like the cinematography, it's the sound design, everything about this is so good. And this is a movie that, like I said, if you're real into like haunted house stuff and you don't like some of the oversaturated like ooh ghosty kind of CGI fests that they had, you know, not so much nowadays because I feel like movies like this more are coming back now, but you know, in the 90s and 2000s, you know, we had all these kind of like crazy CGI ghost movies. I just kind of feel like if you really want to see an example of making a scary movie without really showing anything, this is the thing that I always, this is the movie that I always point out, because there are essentially, there are some special effects in this, but nothing, like you never see any ghosts, you never really see anything that's terrifying, but the way that it's shot, the sound design, the reactions of the characters, just everything about it is just kind of askew, and it's just calculated to, it just, you know, the whole movie is just permeated with kind of this sense of unease. Interestingly too, Robert Wise insisted that this movie be shot in black and white, even though, yes, that doesn't seem weird to people nowadays, but 1963, I mean, most movies were in color then. There were a few that were still black and white, obviously, but he just said, I don't think this would look the same in color. It's like these types of movies really need to be in black and white. So, you know, he did film it in black and white, and, you know, it really does lend something to like a kind of, I don't know, like a weird timelessness to it, I guess. Cause like I said, the cinematography is just this beautiful, luminous looking, cinematography. And it's just like so great. I think it was even like in this contract that this movie never be colorized, because you know, like in the '90s, I feel like, was it the '90s where I think it was Ted Turner, you know, where they were colorizing like all these old movies. And they never looked all that good. I don't know why they bothered. But I mean, Robert Wise was basically put in his contract. He's like, never, ever colorize this movie. It's not allowed. And thank Christ for that, because I just can't, I just don't think, and I'm not saying it would still be a good movie. I just don't think it would be as effective. And I think I said that we were talking about Carnival of Souls the other day, and I had watched a colorized version of that. You know, and it's still a good movie. I love Carnival of Souls, but something about it being in black and white just is so much better. And I just kind of feel like the same thing would have happened if somebody would have colorized this. It's still a great movie, but it would have lost some of its allure, I think. So basically, this follows the plot of Shirley Jackson's novel pretty closely. And like I said, this is essentially a haunted house novel, but it's also like a psychological horror novel. And that was one of the things that I always really liked. I mean, this is easily, the Shirley Jackson book is easily my favorite haunted house novel of all time. And like I said, this is easily my favorite haunted house movie of all time. You're never really entirely sure. I mean, I'm not saying that It is a supernatural novel. I think even Shirley Jackson came out and said, yeah, the, you know, Hill House is actually haunted, but you're not sure how much of the haunting is attributable to the main character of Eleanor, her psychological and emotional fragility. Is she seeing things that other people aren't seeing? Is the house maybe taking advantage of her because of this emotional fragility? Is she somehow manifesting the haunting? It's just like kind of all of these different things that I think it's like really cool. And I think it's really good that the movie kind of goes into a lot of that too. Like a lot of the stuff that was in the book where it's just kind of this ambiguous. You're not really sure how much of Eleanor's mental breakdown is sort of like mirrored by the house, whether she's making the house do it or whether the house is manipulating her. You're never really entirely sure, but that's one thing that I really like about the novel. And also I think they captured that like really, really well. So in case you guys don't know, like I said, it seems old hat nowadays, like this type of setup, but for the time it was like pretty, you know, a lot of haunted house movies that came later owe a big debt to this movie. So basically you have a guy who's like a parapsychologist, anthropologist type guy named Dr. Markway, John Markway. And he has been wanting to look for, he's skeptical, like in a scientist type of way, but he's also wants to look into, you know, the paranormal, wants evidence of the afterlife. And he has decided that the best way to do this is to do a several day investigation at this place called Hill House. Now, Hill House is this huge mansion that was built by a guy named Hugh Crane 90 years previously. And it's had a reputation for being a bad place, like ever since it was first built. So it's one of those ones, and I think he even uses this phrasing in the movie, that it was a place that was born bad. Because even Hugh Crane has built this house like for his young wife, and before the wife even sees it, like they're coming up there in the carriage or whatever, and before she even sees it, like the carriage overturned and she is killed. And then, you know, there's kind of like a voiceover at the beginning of the movie where Dr. Markway is kind of like talking about the history of the house and all the tragedies that happened there. So after she dies, he ends up remarrying, I believe, and then like the second wife, like then they have a daughter. Then the daughter gets, like the second wife is also killed. I think she falls down the stairs. And then the daughter, Abigail, grows up and kind of inherits the house. And then she has this companion that stays with her into her old age, and that companion ends up hanging herself in the library, like above this spiral staircase. And that kind of becomes like a focal point for Eleanor's character, because the character of the companion and the character of Eleanor are supposed to be like mirror images of one another. They go into that a little bit in the movie. I think that's more of a thing in the book. Sometimes I get the two confused because I've read the book so many times and I've seen the movie so many times that a lot of times, and they're so similar that like a lot of times they overlap. I do think they bring up the thing about the companion, especially there's one scene like in a greenhouse where there's this statue of like all these people, and you know, they're saying, oh, it's maybe this figure here, this statue here is the companion, and, oh, that looks like you, Eleanor. So they are like making a parallel between her and the companion who hanged herself. So Dr. Markway has decided to do an investigation in Hill House because of its reputation, the most haunted house in America, whatever. So to do that, he thinks that the best thing to do, would he kind of combs through the annals of, you know, all these psychic societies and things like that, like looking for people who have had either some kind of like psychic powers, quote unquote, or have had some kind of paranormal experiences happen to them. And he thinks that it would be a good idea to bring these people to Hill House to help with the investigation, because he thinks maybe it will like spur something into happening that he can then go on and, you know, say definitively, yes, this house is haunted, whatever. He's trying to essentially prove the paranormal is what he's trying to do. So he gets permission from the woman who owns the house, this woman named Mrs. Sanderson. She's elderly. And so she is kind of like, yeah, I'm going to die. She doesn't live there. Nobody lives there. But she's like, okay, well, you can do your investigation, but you have to take my nephew along because, you know, I'm going to die soon and he's the next in line. He's going to inherit the house. And, you know, so take him with you is kind of like insurance or something like that. So Dr. Markway is going to take the nephew, whose name is Luke, He's played by Russ Tamblyn, who was also in West Side Story, if you didn't know, like right before this was made. So he's going to go along as well to kind of check out what he's going to inherit, like after his aunt dies. Now, even though Dr. Markway approaches like quite a long list of people that he thinks would be good for this experiment, one by one, they all drop out except for two women. One of these women is Eleanor Lance. In the movie, she's named Eleanor Lance. In the book, she's Eleanor Vance. I'm not really sure why they changed that, but whatever. She's played by Julie Harris. And the other one is just a woman named Theodora, who's played by Claire Bloom. Now, Theodora is actually a psychic, and she is supposedly, they kind of go into this, Dr. Markway, when he introduces her to the other guests, she's basically like, she did those Zener cards or whatever. She got like 19 out of 20. So she can basically like read minds essentially. So she's like a psychic. Eleanor is called there, or is, you know, sent a letter and responds to it, because when she was a child, she essentially had like a poltergeist incident, like stones fell on her house. And even though she kind of denies that it happened, it's still in the record somewhere. And, you know, so Dr. Markway found out about it. Now, like I said, he had contacted a lot of different people, but these two were the only ones to actually show up. Now, the character of Eleanor, she's called Nell through most of the movie. That's like her nickname. She's kind of like a really interesting character. She's kind of like a neurotic character. She's very sheltered. She's spent most of her adult life, if not all of her adult life, caring for her invalid mother. So she's never really had a life of her own, because she's just essentially been a caretaker and she couldn't really leave or like go out and do anything. Now, her mother has died 2 months prior to the events of the movie. And she's kind of like sleeping on the couch in her sister and brother-in-law's house. And interestingly, even though she pays rent, and even though she paid for half of their car, they treat her as though she's a child. Now, maybe some of that could be like understandable, because yeah, she hasn't really been out in the world. She's just been spent years and years like taking care of their mother and hasn't really gone anyplace. But she is an adult, and the fact that they, you know, she paid for half of the car and they're just like, no, you can't take it. And she has to like sit there and practically beg them to let her go to this, you know, to Hill House for this, you know, thing. And they just don't want to let her go. They just treat her like she's a child, even though her sister, I'm not sure if her sister's supposed to be older. I think in the book she's older, but in the movie, the actress playing her looks the same age or maybe even a little bit younger. So it just comes off as just kind of like these two just like, no, you just have to stay here and sleep on the couch of this house. So Eleanor's not at a good place in her life. And they pretty much hint from the very beginning, because a lot of the movie is done like in her voiceover and stuff, that she's not, I don't want to say that she's not entirely there, but like I said, she's very naive. She's very vulnerable. She's just not super, super emotionally stable. She's never really developed an identity of her own. You know, she hasn't really had any profound like personal relationships or anything like that. Like she's never been married or had a boyfriend or everything. She's just cared for her mother pretty much her whole entire adult life. So as I said, she's very, very sheltered. And not surprisingly, that is not super like emotionally healthy. So when she gets summoned to go to Hill House, it's almost kind of like this big, you know, this big revelation. It's like, oh, hey, I can have a life of my own. I can be independent. You know, I can go there. They're expecting me. I can belong somewhere, because I kind of feel like that's one of the main things, one of the main thrusts of her character. And one of the things that causes all these problems when she gets to Hill House is that she never felt like she belonged anywhere. Like she didn't feel like she belonged in the world. So the fact that somebody actually like contacted her and was like, hey, we want you to come do this thing, you know, she kind of felt a sense of belonging for the first time in her life, and she didn't really want to let that go. So essentially she ends up, I want to say she steals the car, but she did pay for half of it. So I don't know why they wouldn't just let her have it, but her sister and the husband are just kind of like, no, you can't have it. So she just takes it like without their knowledge and drives up to Hill House. So she's like the first one to get there. So as I said, so they all kind of come to the house. She's the first one to get there. She meets the creepy, the groundskeeper guy, Dudley, and then Mrs. Dudley, who's like the housekeeper. Mrs. Dudley, she has like a great, I can't remember the name of the actress that plays her, but she just has this kind of great when all the guests get there, she kind of has this like spooky spiel. She's like, you know, like in later horror movies, like in Friday the 13th, they have the dude that comes in and is like, you're doomed. It's like she has that kind of role. It's not as over the top as that, but she has this like prepared spiel that she says to each one of them, like as they show up. It's like, you know, no one lives any nearer than town. No one will come any closer than that. You know, so she has all these other, no one will hear you if you need help. And so she just like says the same thing to all of them, and she's like super creepy. And it's like, it's funny, they kind of like, I don't want to say they make like a little bit of a joke about it, but when Theodora's character gets there, she does kind of like make a little bit of a joke about it. And so it's just kind of like funny, but also kind of unsettling. I don't know. It's like hard to say. So one by one, all of them kind of show up, and they, you know, kind of get to know one another. There's actually, interestingly, there's kind of like a strange dynamic, you know, pretty much from the jump, between Nell and Theodora. Now, Nell, like I said, seems like she's very emotionally like fragile. She's very kind of like needy. She wants to belong somewhere. So she really kind of like, you know, Theodora, who they call Theo, is, you know, nice to her. And so she's kind of like, oh, we're going to be best friends forever, all this other kind of stuff. So she like jumps right in there. Theo, it's interesting because in the book, she does actually like imply that Theo is a lesbian. I think, I can't remember if it's more outright in the book or the movie. Because the movie, it's not, it's implied, they never come right out and say that Theo is a lesbian, but it's very, very strongly implied. And actually, people, audiences nowadays watching it would have no problem being like, oh, she, you know, she's a lesbian. But I don't know, like, you know, because of censorship and stuff like that, like in the 60s, maybe you had to be a little bit more subtle about it. Like I said, now it'd be just be super obvious. But yeah, so I don't know. It might have been a little bit clearer in the book, but I can't really remember what it was. But so Theo almost kind of has, at first, like, seems to have a little bit of a romantic interest in Nell. Nell doesn't really seem to pick up on it because, like I said, she's very naive. Interestingly, Nell starts kind of having some romantic feelings toward Dr. Markway, who is married, although she doesn't know that until later on. And that is one thing that causes like this kind of like big conflict later on in the movie. So all four of them gather there. Dr. Markway kind of tells them about the history of the house and what he's hoping to achieve. And then they all kind of like go to bed. Now, the great thing about this movie, and like I said, it's, you know, I can spoil it, obviously, because it's very old. Like a lot of people know the story of this. Like I said, the Netflix series is a lot different than the book and a lot different than this, but it does have like a lot of the same touchstones and stuff. I just think this is one of those movies, especially if you're into older horror, like I said, foundational type horror movies, haunted house movies, this is definitely one you need to see because this is really like an idealized portrait of less is more. You know what I mean? That really, this really illustrates that principle so, so well because you never see a ghost in this, you never see anything. Mostly what you hear a lot of things. Like I said, the sound design in this is really, really great because it's just like this creepy, like the first thing that happens, like the first night that they're there, Nell and Theo are in adjoining rooms and they start hearing this like almighty fucking thundering noise. I think Theo compares it to like somebody just knocked on the door with a cannonball or something like that. It's like really loud, like booming noise, and it's really, really loud. And it seems like it's moving like down the halls, and then it kind of like rattles the doorknob, and they're just like freaking out and all this other kind of stuff. But then when they meet back up later on, there's like, you know, when they meet back up with Dr. Markway and Luke later on, they're like, didn't you guys hear that? It was like so fucking loud. It sounded like fucking bombs and stuff. And they were like, no, we found this, it was this dog inside the house and we followed it out to the garden. So obviously, even from the beginning, Hill House is like trying to separate them. So it's mostly that kind of stuff where they can just hear things. Also, from pretty early on in the film, you can tell that either Eleanor has decided that Hill House is her place, is home to her, has been calling her. This is the place she's been looking for, where she's going to belong her entire life. So the fact that she has that feeling, maybe, if Hill House is actually haunted, which it probably is, maybe the house is using that aspect of her personality in order to manipulate her into getting what it wants. It seems like that's kind of what the movie is saying, because pretty early on, the house seems to target Eleanor in particular, because I think just the second day they're there, there's like a big, somebody has written in chalk on the wall, like really big, Eleanor, it says, help Eleanor come home. Kind of are like accusing each other of it. and stuff. You know, Theo even accuses Nell's like, well, you know, did you do that just to get attention? That kind of stuff. So there's kind of all this ambiguity about whether Nell is doing this stuff for attention, which I don't think she is. But I think that her vulnerability, her, I almost want to say it's narcissism. It's not her self-absorption, I guess, is making her a target of the house in particular, because the house is targeting her vulnerability, and her vulnerability being she feels like she doesn't belong anywhere. And this is the first place where, you know, people have actually like been wanting to hang out with her and talk to her. And this seemed like the first place where she was home. You know what I mean? It's like even she even like thinks things, because like I said, a lot of this is in voiceover. But like when Mrs. Dudley like shows her to her room, she calls it my very own room. Later on, like when shit starts to go even more sideways and Dr. Markway, you know, thinks maybe we're all in danger, so he wants to put Nell and Theo in the same room. She gets really upset about it because she's like, hey, that's my room. You know, she doesn't want someone else invading it, even though her and Theo had been kind of getting along. So the fact that the house is like targeting her is kind of like one of the best things about this movie. I think it's just kind of like her, you know, her weaknesses, like it's almost like the house like exploiting her weaknesses and targeting her in particular because it knows she's the weakest one. One of the best scenes in this too, and like I said, you don't really see anything, but some of the best scenes in this are Nell like waking up in the middle of the night and just seeing like these shadows on the wall, and it's just kind of like hearing these creepy noises, like sounding like a little girl laughing, but then sounding like a little girl like kind of being hurt. And her like freaking out about it. And then she thinks that she's holding Theo's hand all this time. Like Theo is like holding her hand because it's dark and stuff like that. And then her waking up and it's not Theo. And she's just like hanging there with her hand like that, being like something was holding her hand and she didn't know what it was. But it's just kind of like shit like that. Like the creepiest thing, one of the creepiest things too, is like when they're all down in the lounge or whatever it is, and they hear that horrible booming again, and then there's just this great, great shot where just the door to the place just starts like bowing like outward like that, like it's breathing or something like that. It's just such a great visual, and it's just like so simple, but it's just really, really creepy. You know what I mean? It's just like a creepy, creepy movie. So at some point, after all this like shenanigans have been going on, Dr. Markway has started to suspect that maybe this isn't the best place for Eleanor because, as I said, she's very vulnerable. She's had a couple of things where she almost like fell off a balcony and, you know, things like that, because she's like, oh, this house, it's, you gotta watch it every minute, she says, because it's kind of, and so he starts to suspect that probably she's in danger and probably she should leave, at which point she gets very, very upset because, like I said, she's kind of gotten to this fucked up point where she thinks that this is her place now, that she belongs here and she doesn't want to leave because she kind of feels like, oh, they're rejecting her. You know what I mean? She's very, like I said, she's very emotionally, she's a little bit infantile kind of. It's, that's maybe like a little bit of an exaggeration, but she just kind of feels like, you know, Dr. Markway is not telling her to leave because he thinks she sucks. He's telling her to leave because he thinks that she's in danger because this house is targeting her vulnerabilities and she doesn't seem to be entirely aware of that. And he doesn't want her to get hurt. But in her mind, you know, oh, you guys are rejecting me, you know, but this is my place. I belong here. So you can't make me leave, which ends up ending very, very badly. Another thing that spurs onto the thing is, like, near the end of the movie, Dr. Markway's wife, Grace, arrives, who's played by the same woman that played Moneypenny in most of the early Sean Connery James Bond movies. So there's that. I can't remember what the actress's name is, but I'm sure someone in the comments will remind me what it is. But so Grace shows up and she's just like, what are you even doing here? Like, you know, she's very, very skeptical. And she's kind of like, I heard like you were having problems up here, so I'm going to like come and like sort some shit out. So she gets there. And like I said, Nell had kind of started to develop feelings for Dr. Markway and thought that he was developing, you know, romantic feelings toward her as well, even though he was just mostly like kind of paternalistic, avuncular. He just was more concerned about her like as a person, not so much. But she kind of misinterpreted that because she's sort of naive. So she didn't even know he was married. So when his wife turns up, she gets like super, super upset because now she's kind of like, oh, that's why you want me to leave now. Now this woman is replacing me, like taking my place in the house. Now, Even though, so Grace is like super skeptical, like I said, but so she's like, well, where's like the most haunted place in the house? And Eleanor, being an asshole, because she's like jealous, tells her, oh, it's the nursery. Like the nursery is, they haven't even been in there because like the feeling around, the vibe around it, it's like all covered with like cold spots and stuff. And it's just kind of like everybody, like I said, you know, Theo and Nell, who both have kind of like a psychic feel to them, you know, they can feel things. They're just kind of like, yeah, we're not going in there. Cause that's like, I think they call it like the evil heart of the house or whatever. So Nell like pipes up and is like, oh, you should totally sleep in the nursery. Yeah, that's, and you know, Dr. Markway is like, no, just like, what the fuck are you even talking about? And, but Grace of course picks right up on it. Oh, well, if this house is haunted, I guess I'll figure it out. I'm gonna go in the nursery and sleep all by myself, and promptly disappears. So, so not so much, but yeah, so. As it goes on, like I said, there comes like a really intense scene too, where Nell is essentially, like I said, it's almost kind of like the house is like possessing her, or, you know, she's almost, like I said, they're kind of making a parallel between her and the companion, because the companion who hanged herself in the house earlier was also a caretaker for an elderly woman, just as Nell had been with her mother. And, you know, didn't really have much life of her own. So they're kind of like trying to draw a parallel. So there's one point toward the end of the movie where Eleanor is climbing up this, you know, rickety ass staircase in the library, almost as though she's going to repeat, you know, the companion's actions, like she's going to hang herself from there. But she is actually rescued by Dr. Markway in this really like tense sequence where it looks like the staircase is going to like fall off the wall or whatever. And at that point, she actually like looks up, and there's not a lot of jump scares in this movie, but there's like a really great jump scare where, you know, she's up at the top of the spiral staircase and she looks up and there's a trap door. And then suddenly Grace is up there, like looking all fucked up. And like I said, she's been missing for several hours. They've been looking through the house for her and everything. And she just like kind of pops out like, and she didn't know where she was. And so there's all this other kind of stuff. So at this point, they're kind of like, okay, Dr. Markway and everybody else agrees. It's like, look, Nell really has to leave. She's starting to lose her marbles. You know, we don't want to be responsible if she gets hurt. Because like I said, she was climbing up on this fucking staircase. She could have fallen. She could have committed suicide. Like I said, like the companion did. So they're like, okay, well, just no more like arguing. You are leaving. And she, of course, you know, vociferously does not want to leave. This is my place. You know, why is Grace taking my place and stuff? And they're just like, look, chill, we'll find Grace. She's in the house somewhere. Just get in your car and get the fuck out of here, because this house is not good for you. You know what I mean? You're gonna get killed, basically. So it ends up, like I said, I don't feel bad. Like I could feel bad about spoiling it. I don't feel bad about spoiling it because this movie is like super old. And like I said, the book is also really old. And I think most people know how this ends. Essentially, Eleanor ends up not leaving Hill House because it's left ambiguous at the end. But as she's leaving the grounds in her car, either the ghosts of the house take over and like kind of steer it, because it kind of looks like she's like, what are you doing, like she's fighting with the wheel. But then later, like after, like the car crashes into a tree and kills her, and then when, you know, all the rest of the Ghostbusters like come down there and, you know, look at it, Luke says it looks like she deliberately drove into that tree. And so now the implication being that now Nell is also dead and will remain in Hill House just the way she wanted to. I think they might bring this up in the movie, but I think in the book there's like a big thing where like it's a part of a poem or song or something like that that Nell like keeps repeating to herself, journeys end in lovers meeting. And so she essentially thinks that Hill House belongs to her and that she doesn't want to leave it ever. So the fact that it ends that way, but it's almost kind of like the house manipulated her into thinking that so she would kill herself so that she would stay there. It's almost like the house is kind of like gathering souls into itself. So it's almost kind of like a hungry house, what they would call it, like in The Shining or something like that, where it's trying to like gather souls to itself, like to make itself stronger. So I kind of feel like it's that. And honestly, like Stephen King has even said that The Shining was partially based on, you know, or inspired by The Haunting of Hill House, as was his later book, Rose Red, which actually, I think, was initially supposed to be another, like, a remake of The Haunting of Hill House, or The Haunting, in the 90s or 80s or 90s, and he had written a screenplay for it, but they never ended up making it back then, so I think that later he turned that into Rose Red, which is kind of like The Haunting, but not, like, he changed it a lot. Now, let's talk a little bit about, they did do a remake of this movie in 1999 with Liam Neeson and Lily Taylor and Catherine Zeta-Jones and Owen Wilson. And oh boy, does it suck. It is so, so bad. I remember going to see it in the theater because I was very, I was just so apprehensive about seeing it because I'm like, man, The Haunting from 1963, it's so great. It's just such a great movie. You know, and it's like, are they going to fuck this up? Oh yeah, they fucked it up big time. So it was directed by Jan de Bont. And basically, it changed, it's weird because they changed like the whole story. They didn't change the whole story. It's still like essentially the same story, but they changed like the motivation behind it. But it's like in the original movie and in the original book, you know, this is a group of like essentially paranormal investigators. They're coming to like, you know, investigate the haunting and see if this place is haunted. You know, he's a parapsychologist or whatever. In the remake, they made it so that Liam Neeson, who they changed his name to Morrow or something like that, and instead of Markway, whatever. He said he was doing a sleep study and had all these people that were like insomniacs, and he brought them to this like horribly like haunted house, but really he was studying fear. I don't know. It didn't make any sense. Like, why the fuck would that happen? I don't know. But the dumb thing about the remake is that even though the inside of the house looks like super cool and everything, they basically took everything that was awesome about the original movie and about the original book, as in less is more. Like, we don't show anything, but it's still fucking scary. And it just was this explosion of CGI bullshit. I mean, there was just like, what, there was like a bed that turned into a big spider. There was just like, there was that whole thing of like, you know, curtains blowing and like turning into big faces and shit. Like, it was just ridiculous. It was just so, I just feel like, you know, the late 90s to the early 2000s, I just feel like there were so many horror movies that came out. There were just these big CGI suck fests. And this is just kind of like one of the worst examples of that. I just remember, even back in 1999 when I saw it in the theater, I just remember being so, so angry. Because I was like, did you not get like the whole point of the original book and the original movie was that it was scary without having to show anything? You show all these ridiculous CGI ghosts running around in people's faces and shit like that. It's not scary. It was just like stupid and over the top, and it was just like so dumb, and I was just like so, so fucking disappointed in how like lame that movie was and how it just took everything that was awesome about the original, just like did a big fucking diarrhea shit all over it. And it just made me so, so I can't remember seeing a movie in the theater that made me as mad as that, except maybe the Rob Zombie Halloween remake, but that's a whole other video. But yeah, so honestly, the 99 remake is just, it's so bad, and it's like I would not recommend it. It's like, despite like there being good actors, like I love Lily Taylor, I, you know, and I've liked most of movies. I'm not a big fan of Owen Wilson, but you know, but the other two actors, fine. So they had a good cast, and like I said, the, you know, the production design and stuff was nice, but it was just pointless. I didn't see, it was just like a pointless, stupid CGI wank fest, and I just like couldn't stand it, and I hated it. And I even watched it again later just to make sure that I was like, well, maybe I was just a little bit too hard on it, but nope, I liked it even less the second time. So, you know, but yeah, so definitely if you're into horror movies at all and you want to see one of the foundational horror movies from the 1960s, particularly as concerned with, you know, haunted house type stories, and like I said, a lot of the tropes that came from the haunted house stories, you know, that were in the haunted house stories like later, like particularly in the 70s, because I feel like this was super influential. I also saw a video too where I hadn't actually realized this, but they pointed out, they're like, you know, a lot of the camera work in this, like a lot of the weird skewed angles and a lot of the weird, like kind of weird, strange close-ups and the way they use these super wide angle lenses so like the outsides are all distorted and stuff like that, just to kind of give you this whole sense of unease. They said that's very, like Sam Raimi obviously was really into this movie because you can see that he was, that a lot of his camera work was kind of like influenced by a lot of the camera work in this movie. And I hadn't really realized that until I was thinking about it. And then I was like, oh yeah, I guess so. Because like I said, this, not obviously, you know, in The Haunting from 1963, it's not like these big wacky woo kind of shit like that, but you can definitely see where Sam Raimi probably got the idea for some of these kind of skewed, you know, there's even a couple shots in there too, like where, like in Evil Dead, for example, like where they show like shots of like the cabin and then like you can hear these banging sounds. And that's kind of taken pretty much exactly from this movie, because that's kind of what, you know, like I said, this is, they don't really show anything. This is mostly like sound design and camera work, and just cinematography that kind of makes you, it just kind of fucks with your imagination. And that's like the best kind of horror movie to me. And that's why this is still easily one of my favorite horror movies of all time, if not my favorite horror movie of all time. I can just watch it over and over and over again. I love the novel as well. And I was so excited. I've been wanting to do this for a really long time. I don't own it. And then Shudder added it just probably like a week or two ago. And I was like so jazzed. And I was like, oh my God, that's the next one I'm going to do because I love this movie and I've loved this movie for such a long time. So definitely if you have Shudder, you know, you really need to watch this. This is one of those must-see horror movies. It's right up there with like Psycho and The Exorcist and all that. It's like all that kind of stuff. The Innocents. This is one you really need to see if you're like any kind of serious horror fan, because it's just a beautiful movie and just a wonderful, it's just this, the ideal like haunted house movie with, we're not showing anything, but it's still like scary as shit. It's like really, really creepy. And it's just the psychological element and her character. And it's just like the interplay between all the characters. It's just so fantastic. So yeah. And especially if you've watched the Netflix series and you want to see a movie adaptation that's actually much closer to the novel. Although, like I said, I'm not shitting on the Netflix series because I really loved that. But it differs a lot from the source material. So if you want to actually see like a pretty faithful adaptation, then definitely check this out. Like I said, it's on Shudder, and I'm sure you can probably get it other places too, but Shudder just added it, so that's why I'm doing it right now. But yeah, so that will do it for this Flickers of Fear, and I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.